that by mistake.
Good morning, and we'll call the July 16th, 2013 Sussex County Council meeting to order. We're all back from vacation. Hope everybody enjoyed their vacation. We couldn't do any damage while we weren't here, so. Mr. Lawson, the agenda?
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning. There are no amendments to the agenda this morning.
Entertained a motion to approve the agenda?
You got it.
Thank you.
Motion, Mr. Wilson, second. Mr. Phillips to approve the agenda. Any questions? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We had copies of the minutes of June 18th and June 25th. Any corrections, changes, or concerns? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We have one letter from the Ocean View Historical Society addressed to Councilman George Cole. On behalf of the Ocean View Historical Society, I would like to thank you for your contribution to the Coastal Towns Museum Capital Campaign, signed by Diana D. President from Milford Senior High School. To the council, the Milford High School After Prom Committee, we'd like to extend our sincerest thanks for your generous donation to the Milford High School After Prom Party. Your donation helped provide many of Milford's youth with a safe and fun environment. And from CHEER to Sussex County Council, on behalf of CHEER Inc., I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for your generous donation, support of our organization. Your contribution makes it possible for us to continue to provide services to the mature population of Sussex County. Signed by Arlene S. Littleton, Executive Director.
Any correspondence from council?
I got something.
Deaver?
I got something from the Speaker of the House in General Assembly. Evidently, that committee that's being formed under Resolution 22 to look into pedestrian safety on Route 1 is getting together rather quickly. And I got a list of the elected officials they want on the committee. My position is one that they want. And they also want senators and representatives in the appropriate area, so it'll be a big. And then they'll be appointing folks from the regular population. And so I'm glad we're getting going early on that. I will be in that.
Any more things from council? Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Council, we are scheduled to hear from a representative from DLDOT this morning on capital project funding. I would suggest that we move that up the agenda and hear from him now. As a result of the 10:30 public hearing, it'd probably be better if we had that presentation first and then move on to the other items of the agenda, if you don't have a problem with that.
Certainly.
Okay. Mr. Godwin, you want to introduce a gentleman from DLDOT, please?
President, members of council, at our last meeting on the 25th of December, Mrs. Deaver raised a question about funding for the improvements of the intersection at Route 24 and Plantations Road.
Yes.
And that question ensued some discussion, which then asked us to find out if we could hear from DLDOT as to how they prioritize their capital funding for various projects. And today we have DLDOT's Director of Planning, Mr. Drew Boyce, here, who is going to come up and give you a presentation, which I have copies of for you, and then he'll take your questions.
Thank you. Good morning, sir.
Mr. President, thank you, Council. On behalf of our Secretary, Shailen Batt, it's my pleasure to provide you some information this morning on the operations of DLDOT, kind of where we get our money, and then what we do with that money. I thought it would be beneficial to give you a little bit of background and history on the funding sources and those types of things, just to give you a broader perspective of where the money comes from and then where we can spend it, kind of give you a little bit of history or a perspective on some of the changes that Secretary Batt has made in the department over the last couple years. Actually, he's just had his two-year anniversary, so still getting his feet wet a little bit. But we'll start off. He introduced a new mission statement: excellence in transportation, every trip, every mode, dollar, and every one. So basically, we're looking to strive to provide a safe, reliable transportation system We want to provide choices for folks, all modes of transportation, walking, biking, public transit, and of course the roadways. Every dollar, looking to maximize our dollars, get our best rate of return, and then everyone just providing good customer service to folks. Some of our goals are to obviously minimize the number of fatalities and injuries on our system, build and maintain a nationally recognized transportation system, just provide folks with access to different modes of transportation, provide the best customer service while minimizing environmental impacts. One of his big pushes was achieving financial sustainability, and I'll talk a little bit more about some of the decisions that were made from a policy perspective and how that has influenced us in the current condition, but what opportunities are going to be made available to us in the future by some of those financial decisions. And then obviously developing our workforce. Transportation Trust Fund, a lot of different sources of funds. This pie chart kind of gives you a perspective on where they come from. DMVs with the largest percentage of a single source revenue. Those are fees that we collect through that process. I-95 and SR1, I should have maybe put those together. Those are our toll revenues that come in through those two tolled facilities. We have our motor fuel tax, and then the rest of the pie, about 20%, is made up of a cheat, our fare box collections from transit, and interest that we collect and other miscellaneous revenues.
And does that stay in DelDOT?
Yes, ma'am.
Can't be accessed by other...
No, that money goes directly into the Transportation Trust Fund.
Real, okay.
So that fund was set up to basically, the initial intent was to fund capital projects. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether you guys are familiar with the full history, but there was back in the early 90s some issues with the budget, mm-hmm. the general budget. And so DelDOT's operating budget was moved from the general fund into the Transportation Trust Fund. So now competing for these funds was not only the capital side, but also the operating side. And I'll show you exactly how much of the transportation fund is being utilized for operating. So this is just a list of those Transportation Trust Fund revenues anticipating for FY14, about $512 million. To the point I just made, the operating budget, you can see our FY14 request was $342 million. So out of that 512, 342 is for operating. We were the only state agency to come in with a reduced operating budget. So that just goes to show you how committed Secretary Batt is about getting our financial house in order. So we have... reduced our operating budget, overall indebtedness, reduced debt service. When he first came in, we had $1.2 billion worth of debt that we were holding. We made a payment in July that brought our overall debt service down below $1 billion. So we're about $930 million now.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Yes, ma'am.
Prior to the 90s, when you changed the way the money was stored and allocated, which of these revenue sources went into the operating side? I would guess the toll booths would go into the old trust fund.
Right. We had motor fuel and the toll revenue were the two major contributors into the trust fund. Now, since that decision, we brought on two other agencies. The DTC used to operate as an independent corporation that has now been absorbed by DTC or by DelDOT. They're now part of DelDOT. So they come with a, you can see that their fare box is, they collect about $19 million. However, their operating budget is about $110 million. So they are subsidized about $90 million or so, by the Transportation Trust Fund. DMV, on the other hand, brings in a lot of revenue. However, their operating budget is relatively small, so they came with cash, which was a good thing, and it really helps the. You can see the percentage of of how much they actually bring into the trust fund.
So you say DMV and the tolls is what went into the trust fund?
DMV didn't originally, those revenues weren't originally, when they were transferred under DLDOT, under our department, they came with those revenues.
I guess I'm trying to understand how much is the operating budget being subsidized by what traditionally would be considered trust fund money?
Well, all of our, well, yeah, again,
prior
it would.
Prior to 94.
Right. I could put together some additional information for you on that. Obviously.
There's been some discussion about going back to that system.
More this year than any other year since I began being involved in this, you know, because, again, we've got a limited amount of revenue in the trust fund. A lot of that is being utilized for operating, you know, $342 million of the 512. So when you look at that, the balance is what's left for capital. So there was some discussion. Obviously, no action was taken through the legislature this year. However, there was some discussion on maybe transferring it slowly, percentages of that operating budget back into the general fund to make it a little bit more palatable. Obviously, they can't absorb $342 million in 1 year. That's an impossibility. However, you know, some good ideas were kicked around, and we'll see whether those get traction in the future.
And theoretically, I'm trying to follow. Go ahead, Vance. You weren't finished yet.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm trying to follow that. Theoretically, that would give us more money for capital projects?
Yes.
Or no? Okay. That's what I'm
saying. It would bring discipline. The idea is bring discipline to the operating side of.
Well, we still treat our operating budget just like any other state department. So we still do all of the formal submissions to the Office of OMB and basically coordinate it just like we were any other division, even though the funding source is different. So, and again, you know, we came in with a reduced operating budget, and we're going to look to continue to introduce more efficiencies, more opportunities to save money on the operating side for sure.
Is there any discussion of trimming personnel?
That has not been discussed. We've over the last, I want to say 5 years, we have. And I don't have the full statistics, but I know that we have given up several positions, mainly through attrition and just eliminating positions that were unfilled, so no physical bodies have been laid off. However, we have eliminated, and I don't have the exact number, but more than a dozen positions through that process.
What's the state of Delaware's fuel tax on a gallon?
I thought that question would come up, and I don't have the answer. I think it's around 20 some cents, but don't quote me on that. But I can follow up with more details.
I was thinking, and it says 117 against our tolls is far more than the motor fuel tax. That's hard to believe that that costs more to pay a toll than does for fuel tax. If it's 27 cents a gallon, that means there are less than 5 gallons. You pay what?
Again, I'm not too sure of the exact penny amount per gallon. However, you know what we're battling is a fleet of vehicles that gets better gas mileage, so they're going to the pump less. We've seen basically those revenues, the motor fuel tax has been relatively flat, and it was declining for many years because people just weren't driving, they weren't buying fuel, they were. The leisure trip just wasn't happening. Folks were saying, okay, if I got to go to the store, well, I'm going to go get my hair done. I'm going to pick this up. I'm going to go, and I'm going to be more efficient in the way that I use fuel because obviously things were getting more expensive. So, again, as people do that, as people drive less, as people drive more fuel-efficient cars, and then you've got the hybrids that are paying a lot less fuel tax and still users of the road. So Again, on the national level and on the state level, you know, the fuel tax is something that's been being debated.
But our tourists are not stopping, probably. They're going right on through the state, buying it somewhere in another state, which is, might be cheaper. So we have to be very careful.
Yeah, and we're, you know, other states are, you know, as we look at ways to increase revenues, we had some ideas for this year that we vetted through the General Assembly. However, you know, they weren't inclined to look at those ideas for this year. The other states around us, I know Maryland just introduced an increase in their fuel tax.
So that automatically, we would think in our minds, that would automatically say we want to go up a nickel with them. But automatically in our minds we know competition. So they keep right on driving.
It's a catch 22. So maybe hopefully they'll come over across the border to buy their gas.
I was thinking, you know, you just said what the problem is. They're not buying gas. So if we're encouraging them to go somewhere else in another state to buy their gas, fill up before you get in, fill up after you got out of here.
Well, relative to the other states, I think we're doing fairly well. I think New Jersey has a little bit lower gas tax than the surrounding ones, but as far as Pennsylvania and Maryland, we are lower.
We are today.
Today.
It hasn't been, because every time I went to Salisbury, gas was at least a nickel less, at least. Every time I went to the hospital, I could always tell you the truth, I bought gas down.
You bought it in Maryland, see?
Right.
Well, sure, cheaper, why not? If Delaware can't stay competitive, they got to get in the game.
And that's the balance that you have to draw.
Does this include the federal tax when you say $117 million? Is that the federal tax?
No, these are state only funds. We collect a tax also on the federal level that we send to D.C.
I'm not talking about sending. I'm talking about receiving. Are we receiving federal tax? Is this the receiving part that we get back?
We do. And
it's included the federal tax that comes back?
This does not include. This is only the state portion of the motor fuel tax. So we actually get back from the federal government more than we send to them.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And so I'll talk a little bit about federal funding in just a couple minutes.
Okay, if you're going to talk.
Mm-hmm. Can't quite remember where we were.
DTC.
Yeah, this just gives a breakdown of how we spend our operating budget. One of the things I wanted to point out was 33% of the operating budget goes to debt service. So, you know, our yearly payment, $112.3 million to pay our loans, which is not a good position to be in. I don't think anybody would run their household at a 33% debt limit. And so this is one of the things that Shailen is really focused on, trying to reduce this, and has made great strides over the last couple years that he's been with us. I just want to give a couple facts on DTC. 70 routes, two here in Sussex County, eight during the seasonal resort time that we're in right now. Two inter-county that come down into Sussex County, 12.8 million fixed route trips annually, so serving a lot of people. We have over 500 vehicles, 900 employees work for DTC, a couple of unions that always influence the operating budget. We just had a settlement with one of the unions that caused our operating budget to go up a little bit. We had to add about $3 million to the operating budget for pay for those union employees. This is a little bit of the ridership data. You can see that about 10,000 folks use the fixed route, or 10 million, excuse me, 1 million on the paratransit, and then we have rail, and then some statewide figures there. What I wanted to get to was, as we look at this ridership versus the cost, we looked at DTC's operating costs. We got a fixed route system that serves about 82% of the population ride fixed route. That costs us about 44% of the expense. When we look at paratransit, 8% of the folks are using the paratransit service. However, the paratransit service is costing us about 45.6% of the total operating budget. And so there's some disparity there. And we've got a new director, our new chief operating officer for DTC, Lauren Skyber, who is doing a great job bringing some new ideas to DTC, looking at ways that we can provide some more efficiencies on the DTC service. So we are in the process of just looking at that whole service and system and looking for ways to make it better. Again, it's a tough balance there. There's folks that need the service. However, you know, when you look at figures like that and you look at the sustainability, it's tough because they are so subsidized.
Well, as you see it, do you think that the folks who in our county, say, for instance, who live up around the, Slaughter Neck area and whatnot, have said to me, well, we can't get to work and we have no way to get to work. Is bus service going to be, do you think that there would be enough bus service to serve folks like that, or are we just going to stay where we are?
Yeah, to provide bus service to areas like that, you're looking at a highly subsidized service. There's no way.
We're not supposed to make a profit on it, are we? It's not a profit making.
It's a not for profit.
Right.
However, you know, you looked at we're subsidizing $90 million right now.
Right.
To provide a transit service, you would want to. We understand that it needs to be subsidized. That's not an issue.
Right.
The question becomes, at what level, and at what service? What service level, and at what financial level? And so, the more folks that we, you know, the more remote areas that we have to drive to, that's more time, more fuel, more wear and tear. It becomes, a compounding issue, where the service that we're providing is just costing too much. So that's how we weigh.
So probably not.
Where we bring in new services.
But
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably
okay.
not.
Okay.
Well, doesn't the federal government help subsidize these bus routes?
We do get some money from the FTA, the Federal Transit Authority, and we use those funds for purchasing buses and those types of things. We get about $20 million a year from FTA.
I knew years ago I was sitting on the transportation board. I mentioned about losing all this money. This is nothing new as far as losing money with buses. And they said, well, we're getting all this money from the federal government. Of course, you and I, the rest of us, are still paying that bill, and we're all losers, in a sense speaking. So,
right.
We're the same category today. We haven't moved anywhere.
Yeah, it's a tough issue because folks rely on the service.
At other people's expense.
Councilwoman Deaver. And it's...
I've got nothing to offer. We have nothing for them, really. Unless their employer is going to help out somehow,
right.
Send a bus around or something.
Yeah,
and that's
we would
rare.
Hope to provide more opportunities, more affordable housing opportunities within developing areas or already developed areas where it's more sustainable to provide service, where we have higher density populations and those
types
of things.
I've heard that before.
So that's a way. We talked about what percentage of sources come from. We have the obviously the state revenue that comes in, and then we have federal revenue as well. And then we have the Garvey shown here. The Garvey is a. I want to make sure I get the acronym right. Apologize, but the. It's a grant anticipation revenue vehicle. Basically, it's a loan that we took on our future federal dollars that would come to us to help fund portions of the 301 project. So that would be right of way and design. So we kind of keep that on a little separate category. But you can see the funding percentage. And now, back to the state side, we're anticipating in FY14 $186 million. That's broken up into road systems, gets the most of it. That's basically the roads and bridges and those types of things. The grants and allocations are the CTF money that goes to the local legislators, the municipal street aid, those types of things come out of grants and allocations. Support systems are the planning funds, IT, facilities, equipment, those types of things on the capital side. And then the transit systems, which are the capital cost, equipment, IT, those types of things on the DTC side. So that's how things are breaking out this year. Just to give you a little perspective on the history, we have Kind of shown here are actual and projected. So in FY17, we projected a 282 spend. We actually spent 184. So one of the things that Secretary Batt has been after us to do is to say, okay, you know, you can promise a lot of projects, but then what is the delivering capacity? What is the capacity of getting a project through the system, working with all the resource agencies? What is the capacity of the Army Corps to actually review the projects, or DENRAC, or any of the other resource agencies that we have to go through? What is our contracting capacity? There was a time that we delivered prior to 07 a lot higher dollar program. However, we were paying a lot higher prices too, because you had contractors out there going, man, I got so much work, I'm just going to throw this bid in. What do you know? I got it. And now I have to figure out how to get it done. And so we don't really want to be in an environment where that happens, but we want to make sure that we have a responsible, robust program that can be delivered efficiently and effectively. So we're projecting about 186 for FY14. Just some of the challenges. Basically, we're looking at kind of flat revenues coming in, both state and federal. The DMV fees are really the only thing that was shown an increase. So folks are selling cars. And so we get some revenue from that. The gas is pretty flat. The tolls are pretty flat. Everything else is really staying pretty flat. More capital demands and resources. Obviously, you know, we have a lot of things out there that need some repair. One of the things I'm going to talk about in a little bit is state of good repair. That's not fully funded. That's kind of taking care of what you have. Secretary Batt has proposed a philosophy of taking care of what we have so that we get the full life of the project, kind of a stitch in time saves nine type of philosophy. Good thing. The Community Transportation Fund, obviously that's the legislators always utilize that fund, and it's an important way to fund local infrastructure. So we see some value in that. Municipal street aid, obviously, the municipalities are struggling. This year we allocated $5 million to be split up amongst all the municipalities. It's not a lot of money. It doesn't give them enough to do what they need to do as far as street repair and infrastructure.
How much for the whole state, you say?
$5 million.
$5 million for statewide. It's based on the allocation is based on population, a formula with population and the linear feet of road that you actually maintain.
The population, as according to census figures of people living here full time, or how do you figure that?
That's a good question that I don't know the specific answer to.
Extra people in the summertime.
It's based on the census data.
Uh-huh.
So we don't capture those seasonal peaks. And then the ADA transition plan is something that is fairly new to us. We federal law required us to do an assessment of all of our inventory, sidewalk inventory. And so we've identified that about 50% of it is non-compliant with current ADA standards. So, we've estimated, you know, if you were to fix everything all at one time, you know, a $500 million liability there that we're going to have to take down a little bit at a time. Something else that's competing for the funds. Talked a little bit about Shailen's, Secretary Batt's kind of new way of becoming more fiscally responsible. And one of the things that we're doing is we're maximizing state dollars by federalizing projects. So we're federalizing a high percentage of the capital project. Almost every capital project now utilizes federal funds.
But that means you have to have sidewalks and this and that and that. You have to spend more money when you do that.
Well, we on a state level
How does that work out?
There's really not that many more requirements
okay. When
utilizing federal funds versus state-only funds. The biggest things are our environmental coordination. So we do a lot more archaeology work, which can add up.
Under the Fed?
Under the federal guidelines. But as far as complete streets, You know, we have an executive
board.
I get
those complaints.
The governor
has
signed the complete streets.
Yeah.
We are to provide for all modes of transportation whenever we look at a corridor. If it fits the context of where that roadway is, then we provide the sidewalks, the bike lanes, those types of things. So that is basically an executive policy that came down from the governor saying you will create regulations to accommodate complete streets.
So that is not strictly up to that because you have federal money then?
It's a state as well, right? That's a state mandate, right?
Okay.
An executive order.
I do get complaints about things like that, you know. And now I have an answer.
Now, we do have some things. The new federal authorization bill that came through, MAP 21, that's a two-year bill. It also has some caveats with it. I'll talk about those a little bit. One of those was performance management, where the feds are going to be looking at the states creating measures for performance and then actually dictating funding where you may be underperforming in a identified area. State of good repair, talked a little bit about that, managing our assets, and then the prioritization process we're looking to revamp that prioritization process. I'll get into a few of those details too. Federalizing projects, basically we're looking to federalize more paving projects, which is a good thing for Sussex County. We're also looking at using toll credits. Now, toll credits are a credit that was due to us by the feds based on state dollars that we spent to improve tolled facilities. So all the state money that we spent on I-95, where it was just state only, we got a credit back. So every dollar we spent, they gave us 80 cents. So we ended up getting about $130 million of toll credits. So basically what we can do is use those toll credits for the state match. So if a project costs $200,000, or let's just say $100,000, we can spend $100,000 of federal money. Basically, the statistics go 80% federal, 20% toll credit. However, the full $100,000 would come out of the apportionment that we get. So it's not new money, it just gives us the ability to match at 100%. Mm-hmm. So then we can take those state dollars that we would need for the 20%, apply that to another project. Mm-hmm. So a good way to do business. And that was a relatively new thing that, you know, just reading through their code, found it, said, oh my gosh, we could maybe get some money back. So those are kind of the efficiencies that we're trying to do.
They haven't been sending it to you?
The federal funding, it comes with a lot of strings. There's no other way to say it. They break it down into categories. They tell you what areas that you can spend particular kinds of money. It's based on population. It's based on the road type. They have different interests that they're trying to fund. When you look at the CMAQ, where they're looking at air quality, We have a certain amount that we can spend on air quality. We have transportation alternatives, which was the old transportation enhancement program. So they're, you know, they don't just give you the $160 million and say, you know what's best for this money, you spend it. No, they there's a lot of strings that come attached with it. So the funding is not available for all roads. Federal funds can only be spent on certain roads based on functional classifications, and that's where Sussex County has some limitations because of the nature of the county, because of the rural nature. I know this is a little bit hard to see, but this is the national highway system. You can see that in Sussex County we have four routes that are on the NHS, the national highway system. And as we go up, Kent County has three or four as well, but then as you get up into Newcastle, you can see that there is a lot more of the national highway system in the upper county. And, you know, that dictates, you know, part of the money has to be spent on the NHS. So then that limits our ability to put funding in. Also, funding is based on the functional classification of the road. What is the road serving? And so we have a lot of local roads down here in Sussex County. Local roads are not eligible for federal funding. rural collectors are not eligible for federal funding. So then that leaves us with the arterials and major collectors that are eligible. And so it just, you can see the dilemma that we just have limited opportunities as we federalized more of our capital projects, then there's a limited amount of roads that we can actually spend that funding on. So we'll look at that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a little bit if we have time. Just real quickly, performance management. I talked a little bit about this. Mandate for MAP 21, the new federal authorization. It's basically just establishing goals, measuring, and then reacting to how that system is performing. When we look at our pavement condition, we're doing very well. When we look at our bridges nationally, Delaware is doing very, very well with our bridges. One of the highest ranked states. So if we look at just the core infrastructure, we're not doing too bad. Some of the things that we're going to be measuring are safety, our project delivery, our asset condition. I talked a little bit about the bridges and pavements in good or fair condition. And then congestion management. That's some other areas that we're looking at, trying to get performance measures, and then looking at what we can do with corridors, either with timing, with signal timing, to try to get more folks through certain congested corridors. The state of good repair. This is also a federal mandate. We're looking at identifying our major assets, looking at the level of funding that's going to be required to fund those, keep those up to a state of good repair. So we have bridges, we got drainage, we got pavement, signs, traffic systems, our facilities, all of those things are important. When we looked at the cost of those, we're looking at annually $169 million just to maintain a state of good repair. And we're looking at $189 million capital, so if we funded just on state of good repair, we have very little left for expansion and other capital type improvements. And then we've got a cost to bring to good because we have some assets that are not in good repair right now, $136 million. So you can see that is basically something that is competing with our ability to introduce new capital projects, just taking care of what you have, which is a philosophy that the Secretary has adopted. When we look at the prioritization process, okay, we've got limited funds, we've got a lot of things competing for those funds. How do we look at those limited funds and the needs that are out there, and how do we apply those funds to those projects? We're looking at, we've got a matrix developed. We're looking at safety, economic development, capacity and congestion, environmental impact, asset preservation, and quality of life. These are not in order, by the way. So I think safety was number one, and actually asset preservation was number two when we looked at our pairwise comparison, which is a kind of a hierarchy of what is important to DelDOT. I'll go over that in a little bit. The Delaware Code is what directs us and guides us in developing the prioritization process. It's governed by the Council on Transportation, which is an organization that is of elected folks, local folks, that have the authority to approve our capital transportation plan. So basically, it just says that it has to be a method for determining, it has to be a mathematical method, and it doesn't include kind of what I'm calling system preservation projects. So that's kind of all those state of good repair projects don't have to be included in the actual prioritization for the kind of new capital projects, I'll say.
Well, what if we generated special money? Because we have a lot of things being built now. It's coming back. How homes are being built now. And I'm just wondering how much we contribute, and could we not have certain projects that have that money directed to those projects that we need, or do we have to just give it all to, and in the pot, all goes in the pot, and you decide?
Like I said, there are some, there is some dedicated money to Sussex County from the federal side.
Right.
Okay,
but
for rural areas, but it's not much. $1.3 million.
We're contributing a lot, if I have the figures correct. Maybe not as much as the other counties, but I think it's very, say that we did, theoretically. Would you be able to sequester or keep those funds just for Sussex County improvements?
The goal is to look at all the needs from a statewide perspective.
Okay.
So we would have to, if we were going to go a different route, if we were going to say, okay, you know, establish some minimum threshold or some minimum level of investment in Sussex County, that would require more discussion between DOT and the council, for sure.
You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I mean, and there is some dedicated funding, and we try to, you know, but obviously, if we look at the urbanized area, which is kind of Newcastle County, we have to spend $13 million there of our federal STP apportionment. That's the surface transportation program. Relative to that, Sussex County gets $1.3 million. So there, you know, that's what's being dictated to us by the federal government. And so obviously we can't do as much, maybe even as we would like to do down here. One of the things that we're able to do, because we have so many local roads in Sussex County that aren't eligible for federal funding, because we are federalizing most of the capital projects, that frees up those more flexible state dollars to be applied on any road that the state deems necessary. So what we're able to do is we've bolstered up just our standard pavement rehab program with quite a few state dollars this fiscal year, so that we're able to reach down and get some of that local infrastructure done that wouldn't be eligible otherwise for federal funding. Okay. So there is, you know, we're trying to give ourselves what I call like an optimization of all the different sources of funding. What can you spend it on? It's a very complicated process. It comes with so many strings. So it's an exercise of trying to figure out, okay, what is the best way to fund this, state or federal, and then still looking to maximize, get the most bang for your buck that you can.
Theoretically, most of the money could come from one county and it's spread all over the state, right? I mean, that's the way it works, right?
That is true. We
right.
we look at a statewide program.
You got to take into consideration that Sussex County is probably bankrolling these other two counties in a sense of speaking, because the biggest industry in Delaware was what?
Poultry.
Agriculture, sure.
Agriculture, right.
Well, here if you're going to not fund these roads to get agriculture out of here, creates another problem. And if you just keep jamming up this main highway for agriculture to use, agriculture is going to find somewhere else to go because they can't stay here. I mean, these truck drivers, these companies cannot spend hours and hours trying to get a truck from Millsboro to New York City and spend three or four hours maybe even trying to get out of here, just move up a little bit and stop, move a little bit and stop. It's just a waste of cost and money and the cost. And they operate on expenses. I mean, they got to balance a budget here. It's not like, we're not like the state or someone else. They got the private business, you understand?
Yeah, we're very concerned about the freight movement in the state. I mean, we
got a river too. Got a river helping out a little bit, maybe.
No chickens on the river.
I mean, we look at our airport infrastructure, our rail infrastructure, our you know, the trucking on the right. on the surface for surface transportation. It's important. And we need to balance those needs for sure.
You see all that money. So when I start talking about population, there's a lot of money coming out of Sussex County to support their state. So we got, and 1 to 13 is not a good ratio to me.
Well, that's just a small portion of the total federal funding. So that's just, I just wanted to try to give you an illustration of kind of the strings that come with that federal funding. I don't think federal funding is necessarily the answer. I think that we can, you know, what we're doing now is we've got, we federalized as much as we can to free up the flexibility of the state dollars, applied that to kind of a state of good repair application, looking at getting more local roads paved, good surfaces, you know, safe roadsides, so that we can keep folks moving on what is the backbone, you know, this local network to get folks around the county.
You talk about safety. Now, we've had more people getting killed trying to cross the highways in the last few years. I never heard tell hardly anybody ever getting killed. But the state has come up with a bright idea, little blocks across the highway. And you don't see them until you get up on them. You don't see the people until you get up on them. And just yesterday, I was riding down the highway, and I come up in a situation. This guy never looks. He's got a cigarette in his hand. He just fires right all across the highway. If I had not really been paying attention, this guy would be history. So I think it's just crazy the way we get this, the walker in the right of way. He takes it for granted. He doesn't care if he looks or doesn't. See, and the drivers are going down the highway, not really paying. So I think this is a creative problem, because this didn't used to be till the last 3 or 4 years. And we've got more people being, every time we got more people get killed going across the highway, we have almost riding down the highway. So somewhere along the line, we've got to change that up or look at it different.
Yeah, it's a top priority for us. I mean, as we look at congestion, more folks are going to be seeking other modes of transportation. That's going to be biking, that's going to be walking. So there's just a shift in what we've come accustomed to is that it's me and my vehicle and the road, it's mine, and that's where I'm going. And so, as we shift into, you know, providing more opportunities for these modes, you know, walking, biking, the vehicular population is going to have to adjust as well. When we come through with our SR1 sidewalk project, you know, to fill in a couple of those missing links, create the crosswalks down there at the in Councilwoman Deaver's district along SR1, obviously we're going to have to create, you know, we're going to be creating a lot more crosswalks, mm-hmm. Which is going to impact and be directly related to the capacity of that roadway. How many, it's going to reduce the number of vehicles that we can get through because we have to give the folks enough time to walk through. That's a federally mandated, 2.5 feet per second is how fast the average person can walk. It's finding those balances.
Is it federally mandated, though, to require those signs encouraging the pedestrian to, you know, to go into the traffic? I'm trying to see how the phrase is, because I know on Coastal Highway they have, like in North Bethany, they have some crosswalks there, and it got the signs, and it seems like it's encouraging people to, you know, enter into the path of the oncoming traffic, which is going 55 miles an hour. It just seems, is it federally mandated that you have to provide these crosswalks and that the cars have to stop? Or is it just kind of get, like you say, this shift? It seems
we have a state law that governs, you know, the rights of a person, pedestrian, in the crosswalk.
Okay, say the state of Delaware passed legislation giving the pedestrian certain
federal.
Did they look? I mean, I'm not familiar with the law. I mean, but is it on any roadway? It just seems so illogical and ridiculous to encourage the pedestrian to be encountering an automobile when they're going 55 miles an hour,
right?
Even 35 miles an hour. Like I hear them talk about going through Dewey Beach. It ought to be like if at 25 miles an hour or less, I can understand pedestrians having the right of way, like in the circle here at Georgetown. But they got in such ridiculous, unsafe situations, and it seems to me like it's the government insisting that we commit to this pedestrian safety issue on roads that are just inappropriate for it. So I'm just wondering who the heck is engineering all this stuff.
You know, we struggle with this issue for sure.
Well, there's no struggling.
We give it a lot of thought. We're talking more about about mid-block, what we call mid-block crossings, which is a crossing that is not at a signal.
Jaywalking.
When we, obviously our desire would be to have everybody walk down to a signal, wait for the signal timing to cycle, look at your pedestrian signal. When it says walk, you walk. However, you know, we're dealing with human nature, and folks won't go, you know, there's a certain limit on how far somebody will walk down there when I just want to go right over there.
But you've given the pedestrian the arrogance to think that, you know, they like you say, like Sam said, they just strut right out without even looking many times because they've seen the sign, they know they're in the right, they're going to stop that car. It's like guy, the bicyclists who get right on the line and they want to flaunt their ability to be there with the traffic, and it just seems that we've lost sight of the fact that an automobile is so big and so heavy and so dangerous mm-hmm. versus a bicycle or a pedestrian. And I just think somebody's got to come back with some common sense and start telling to pedestrians that this isn't a safe place, and there ought to be signage saying, you know, pedestrians yield to traffic in certain situations, not always traffic yield to pedestrians. So we kind of it's got to be a two-way street, and there isn't any two-way street, and I've seen them. A car the other day on Coastal Highway, four-lane highway, stopping. Then the next car doesn't see it. They don't know what the heck's going on. Mm-hmm. And there's no designated crosswalk. So I don't know. It just seems, if you're putting a lot of thought to it, get some different people mm-hmm. to try to see what they think.
And maybe when we look at the pedestrian safety through the...
it's just crazy.
Through the resolution, we can
I have a question. Why can't we just get more overhead lighting? What program does that come from? Why not? Why isn't it done? How difficult is that? It would have prevented a lot of these accidents on Route 1. You know, there's...
Overhead lighting is definitely a tool in our toolbox, and so we, you know, we utilize that. We have a highway lighting guidelines that we use. It's one of our countermeasures for safety, where we're seeing increases in safety issues at intersections, and so it is something that we do use.
Right.
You know.
Well, a bus just hit a bike that was in a turn lane. It was at 9 o'clock at night, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how that happened, but I just think it was maybe at a time where overhead lighting might have helped. Maybe the bus would have seen the biker. I just don't, you know. Yeah. Why not? Why not have more better lighting?
$2 flashlight would take care of that.
Sir?
A $2 flashlight would take care of that.
Well, there is a lot of problems, I agree. And hopefully
we don't want to be sending the wrong message to.
But lighting is coming.
Right.
Plus, when we walk her, I think that's what we've done. We sent the wrong message. We need to let them know that they need to wait for the traffic. As same as if I was taking my car and getting out of here on the highway where there's not a signal light, I got to sit there and wait until the traffic clears enough so I can get across. Where in the world do we get the idea we got a walker that's going to stop everybody and he just walks out? Total wrong idea.
Well, it's probably not his department, but I'm
I
sure.
I know, but you can remind him. And we think it's crazy. I think most of.
Well, that's the hot topic right now. It is, Sam. It is.
It's
very serious with the number of people we have in the beach.
Well, you hear it all the time.
Right.
It's somebody killed.
And then folks coming from areas where the laws may be different.
That's right.
That's a big.
You know, the perception may be different. The culture's different. You know, so again, it's definitely a concern.
I have to say, when some folks who came here from elsewhere go home for a visit, they often come back and stop complaining. You know that. They do.
That's true.
We have our problems, but I think they're worse where people came from.
They come from Baltimore. They're glad to be here.
Okay. Real quickly, I just want to talk about the prioritization process. We have some guidelines that were adopted by the Council on Transportation. That's the official body that adopts our prioritization process. Back in 1998, that's what we used. We had developed a pipeline process that basically fed off of that prioritization process. And basically, back when these were developed, the trust fund was in a much healthier condition. Revenues were up. The economy was doing good. We had enough funding to be able to look at a program like this where we had certain types of projects. We had expansion projects. We had congestion management projects. We had bike and pedestrian projects. Each one of those types of projects had a had a pool of funding that they could use so the projects were then prioritized amongst themselves. There was really no, you know, how do you compare a, you know, a safety project, vehicular safety project with a sidewalk project? You know, that's where there was this missing link. And so back in 06, and really we've been kind of in the same state of the state since 06 is when the transportation fund basically tanked. We were way over programmed. We came out with what is the necessary pain list for those of you who were around at that time. Basically, you know, cut 2/3 of the capital projects off of the CTP. And so, you know, went back to this. We have one funding source. We've got to figure out how to prioritize and rank projects across all different interests of what that projects or the need that that project is trying to solve. So really, it you know, when we look at this decision-making process, it's very difficult with what we have existing. So we are examining and working through a process to look at a different way of prioritizing projects, basically assessing what value those projects bring across a matrix of ideas and criteria so that we can get away from kind of this dysfunctional decision-making process where, you know, because everything is so complex these days, you know, the types of funding, the complexity of just delivering a project, the public interaction dealing with and building consensus. So we want to get away from, you know, the dark smoky room, these backdoor sessions. We want to have something that's more transparent because then you folks know exactly what's going on. The public knows exactly what's going on, and that's what we're moving towards. And again, there's just so many things that go into the decision-making process. It's very complex. I don't want to go through this whole list in the engineering in the interest of time, but a lot of competing interests. You know, we've got local interests, we got political folks wanting to know where we are, the taxpayers, employees, the environmentalists, the users. You know, all of these interests are coming together, and so we have to balance that. So what we've entered into is utilizing a tool called Decision Lens that is kind of a transparent tool that allows you to rank and rate projects against each other. So this is these are a couple screenshots from that tool, and so basically you do pairwide comparison. So how important is safety to you compared to congestion management? How about congestion management versus economic development? How about pedestrian safety versus vehicular capacity?
Is that
and so you're able to
the whole state or county by county?
This is from a statewide perspective.
Okay.
Now we could pare down and do a more localized look at this process. And again, we're using this from a statewide perspective. For the main capital program, we're using this. When we look at transportation alternatives, the old TE process, different set of criteria, different set of rules. So we're looking at different decision-making interests and how they weight against each other. So then a project or an idea or a problem is going to come in to the system, and it's going to be weighted against these. It's going to bring certain value. It's going to have certain elements, and how do those compare to these priorities that have been established for the state? The alternative priority and sensitivity. So alternatives are all the things that you could do, you know, all the projects basically, and they are weighted, and then they are chronologically ordered based on their value that they bring. You can do a budget allocation. So this is what I'm talking about, this funding optimization. So this project's eligible for X, Y, and Z federal funding, and it also is eligible for state funding, and the system has the ability to push out and optimize those different levels of funding. And the really cool thing about it is it's is it's transparent, it is flexible. So if our needs change, like all of a sudden the feds dictate a different type of performance measure, or if we're underperforming in an area and all of a sudden this has to be, you know, this has to rise to the top, we can adjust the system and all of a sudden it can give us a new answer on exactly what the capital program should look like.
Will that be available online? We could see it?
I can, maybe at a later date, I could mm-hmm. come down and show you the system.
Sure, that'd be fine.
So we, you know, it's still in beta testing right now. We still don't have the Council on Transportation's approval mm-hmm. to utilize it. Our goal is to present it to the Council on Transportation sometime late summer, and then hopefully utilize it, or at least partway, to develop the 15 program.
But you do have it now, then.
We are utilizing it now. So. Really, it enables us to do that where we had that missing link where we really couldn't compare projects across different interests. It does now give us that ability to stack all the projects in one list. You know, you can do different scenarios. You can force funds. So say, you know, Sussex County had a critical project that was
we're looking at
that had to be
right
done,
now.
You know, yeah. or we made a decision to say we had to be done. Okay, transparent decision making. This project's getting funded. I don't care where it is on the list. It's getting funded. We announce it. Everybody knows, and there it is. And this is the. But what's interesting with the system is it can show you the consequence. Okay, now these are the projects now, because of this decision. Now these don't get funded. And you can then weigh that to say, okay, is that the right decision?
Good to know.
And so it will provide us a lot of flexibility there. React to different priorities, I talked about that, and you can force fund the projects if desired. So this is the last slide. Update on major projects. I don't know if anybody's interested in any of these projects or any other projects, but I have some information.
When will SR1 and 30 be finished?
Be finished, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be a while.
I thought I had all the answers.
Well, I know that it's being done, and it was very dangerous, and I'm glad it's happening, and I just was curious.
Looking at where they are, I would say they should be able to wrap that up in 14 sometime.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They still got a lot of work to do. I would say by midsummer,
parks come under roads.
Excuse me. Well, the park enhancements, we were, as part of our agreement with DENREC, we're responsible to do those park enhancements for the camping. So we had to shut them down for a couple years. We actually, in the agreement, we paid them some rent basically for them not being able to get that revenue.
So who gets the revenue?
It goes to DENREC.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
And yet we're responsible to put the roads in. Maybe we got to go back to DENREC and get the money. Somebody should know how to handle it.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like some right department's not paying the fair share.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's, mm-hmm. There's a lot of competition between departments.
Any more questions of council?
I don't see plantations in 24 on there. We've looked at plans for years. Delgat's brought us plans for years, saying that this is going to happen. And nothing's happening. We're looking at a lot of development in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very concerned.
When we put together the we've made some strides on the 24 corridor to make those projects compete better, and it's definitely not the need that is holding them back. It's the funding eligibility that's holding them back. Now we've opened them up for a lot more different types of funding. You know, we've got the $1.3 million, obviously, we have to spend in Sussex. We could apply that there. That doesn't get you a 24 project.
It was just recently paved over. I mean, it wasn't even needed. It didn't need to be paved. It needed new lanes.
When we look at our preservation program, I know. When we look at our preservation program, sometimes you scratch your head, but it's a very regimented process on which roads we select for repaving. And again, it's that stitch in time, kind of saves nine type of philosophy. When we looked at with the implementation plan for that, it was far enough out, because when you look at hot mix paving, you're looking at about a 7-8 year life cycle. And so, you know, it was out far enough that they wanted to make the investment now, so that we would have a good riding surface up until we can implement it. Mm-hmm. Now, the 24, that first one was right on the cusp, so it got that out year funding when we looked at how it related to all the other projects in the state. And back to my original point where, you know, it's eligible. It's a safety project, so it's eligible for federal highway safety funds. Statewide, we get $11 million to distribute amongst the whole state for highway safety improvements. Not a lot of money when you look at all the needs, all the accidents, and how those accident projects rank and rate up against each other.
Well, that's what you have there. That's right.
And so it is eligible. So then we can apply that funding to it. And again, there is some other STP flexible money that can be spent on there. However, all of the flexible money that we have right now is devoted to the 26 project, because it is not eligible for any other type of funding. That's the only type of federal funding that we can apply to that road. And so it's consuming all the capacity. So that's the real struggle down here, is we can only have the capacity for a couple big projects at any one time. And, you know, just strictly talking about the federal funding level.
Sure.
Now, as we get more and more, you know, as revenues increase and we have more flexibility for state dollars to be spent, we fully fund our state of good repair, then we can start talking about, you know, getting some state dollars working down here where we're less restrictive. And this is probably where they would come, because we have a lot more opportunities to spend federal money in at least the northern part of the state. Kent is kind of in the same boat as you as far as eligibility. However, they have a lot less issues, I'll say, transportation needs.
Mr. Phillips has a question.
It sounds like to me that the one thing we all agreed on is the mistake it is to give pedestrians the right-of-way on crossing high-speed roads. Is that to change that? Is that a decision of the General Assembly, or is that a policy decision by the head of your department?
Vance, if you could tell me one more time. It's getting the pedestrians.
Well, as Mr. Cole said, I think we all agree with him that giving the pedestrians the right-of-way to cross some of these roads that cars are driving 55 miles an hour on doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
To change that.
Yeah, that's in the Delaware Code, so that would be.
That's a General Assembly.
That's a General Assembly.
Well, you'd have to put walls up to change that. Right. And they do that some places.
And we've talked about, you know, pedestrian overpasses and those types of things, and then getting folks to use them is then the next issue after you build it. This pedestrian vehicle interface is a big concern for
Ocean
us.
Ocean City's got the same problem now.
Up and down
it's
the state,
Del us.
State, right?
Yeah, it's not us, just us.
Any more questions, Council?
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming down and for taking your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Very good presentation.
Thank you. We'll now back up to